It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, now at 10 p.m., right here at 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area, and worldwide at mybradio.com. That's mybradio.com. And of course, on the 77 WABC app. Exciting bit of news. The July Nielsen ratings are in, and this show is number 3 in this time slot in New York AM radio. Pretty cool. Special thank you for the great listeners who enjoy this the content that we provide each week, and we really appreciate your patronage by tuning in to this show here on 77 WABC. As the listeners know, each week we discuss so many different professions, including on any given week we could be discussing sales, social media, corporate culture, emerging technologies, retail, communications, entrepreneurship, financial planning, marketing and advertising, time management, hiring, customer retention, and so many other additional subjects. Of course, as I do each week, we open with some thank you. Special thank you to Pesach Trapper, the show's producer, and to the entire team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, who plays such an important support role. Srilly, Rifki, Rina, Miriam, Dina, thank you. And of course, to the great team here at 77 WABC, Jose, Matt, Chris, Brian, Justin, thank you. Special shout out to the various forums that we're syndicated on: Mishpacha Magazine, the monthly Take 5 column, C-Suite Radio, Audio Boom, Player.fm, iTunes, YouTube, C-Suite TV. And all the episodes are available by going to mybradio.com, mybradio.com. And of course, you could follow me on social media. My Twitter handle is ysaftlas, Y-S-A-F-T-L-A-S. Also want to mention that our previous guests, as I said, but just to mention some of the guests that we've had, and they're all available by going to mybradio.com. Joe Hart, the president and CEO of Dale Carnegie; Shep Hyken, world-renowned customer service expert; Paul Massey of Cushman & Wakefield; Steven Sato, former CEO of Saks Fifth Avenue. They're all available by going to mybradio.com. This week, a special show. We are going to re-air the incredible interview I had with John Sculley, the former CEO of Apple and Pepsi. Here goes.
We're going to our incredible guest, Mr. John Sculley, the John Sculley, former CEO of Apple and Pepsi. John is recognized worldwide as an expert in marketing and responsible for the famous Pepsi Generation. I remember that campaign. And the Pepsi Challenge campaigns. During his 10 years as CEO of Apple, the company just grew and grew. That's just the simplest way to say that. John currently serves as chairman and CMO of RX Advance. Therefore, we encourage you to stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where we will discuss the process behind Pepsi and Apple's legendary marketing campaigns, how to grow a company and of course, increase revenue, new technology in the healthcare industry. With that intro, we give a very warm welcome to Mr. John Sculley. John, how are you?
I'm well, Yitzhak. Very nice to talk to you and join you on your program today.
Well, such a treat. Let's just start off. You know, we live in a world where everyone thinks that you wave your magic wand and suddenly you're a megastar, you're a CEO, you've hit the jackpot. You had a journey. Perhaps you could talk about your journey.
Sure. I was born in New York City at Beth Israel Hospital.
Hey, New York, yes.
Yeah, I'm a real New Yorker. I grew up in New York. I know all the subways. Know my way around town. I always have. Still love New York.
Nice.
And after I got out of school, I went on to Brown University, and then I went on to Wharton Business School and got my MBA. I did something that most people probably wouldn't do with their MBA. I became a truck driver. And I went to work for Pepsi as their first MBA. They didn't know what to do with me, so they put me out on a Pepsi route truck in Pittsburgh. And I trained there for 3 months, and then they sent me out to Phoenix, Arizona, and then they sent me to Las Vegas, and they sent me to Milwaukee and so forth. So I learned the business by getting my hands dirty. And I still believe that's the best way to learn a business is to learn it right from the bottom on up, so you understand how things work. You can't improve them unless you understand what you're improving from. And I got a lucky break when I was given the assignment. I now returned to headquarters, was in charge of market research for Pepsi. And I was given the assignment when cyclamens were banned and they needed to come out with a replacement using saccharin for Diet Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And I had to go on the Walter Cronkite TV show and do a live interview because no one else more senior than me was available at the time. And that was my lucky break. And wow. From that, I got to get bigger assignments in Pepsi. I was eventually made marketing VP when I just turned 30. And at that time, Pepsi was outsold 10 to 1 in half the country. By the end of the decade, I was CEO at Pepsi, and we actually outsold Coca-Cola as the largest selling consumer package brand in America. And that's what attracted Steve Jobs and Apple's attention to me to come join Steve at Apple. He said he was building this remarkable new machine. It was going to be called Macintosh, and he needed to learn how to do consumer marketing because that's not what high-tech did back in those days. And we launched the Macintosh 2 years later in a famous commercial on the Super Bowl, and the rest is history.
You know, if I just want to remind the listeners, if we don't discuss anything else in this show, just listen to the previous 3 minutes again and again. It's so important, you know, just to understand that the way life works, you gotta excel and put your passion and your heart into anything you do, and then the lucky breaks will come. They'll come along the way. I mean, obviously some bigger than others, as John can attest to. But wow, what a story! Now let's talk about Pepsi. As CEO of Pepsi, you were responsible for some of the most legendary marketing campaigns: the Pepsi Generation, the Pepsi Challenge. Perhaps you could walk us through those, really famous, momentous campaigns.
Well, it came down to a couple of important insights. For the Pepsi Generation, I was at a lecture at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City one evening, and Dr. Margaret Mead, who was probably the most famous anthropologist in the world, was giving a lecture, and she said, "The most important fact..." And this is back in the 1960s. She said, "The most important fact is the emergence of an affluent consumer. We've never had an affluent consumer in the United States before." Remember, this is as the middle class was just beginning to emerge. Mm-hmm. And she called this the baby boomers. Baby boomers were then teenagers and just growing up with discretionary income. And they're now the baby boomers who are retiring. But when we created the Pepsi Generation, it was created, for them, to show them the aspirations that in those days soft drinks symbolized. And mm-hmm. What is really interesting is that we learned that when you're dominated by a huge brand, at that point, the world's most valuable brand, Coca-Cola, right. They own reality. We had to own expectation. Expectations precede reality. And so we said, created the expectations of the Pepsi Generation, which people could aspire to, the emerging middle class, particularly baby boomers. And then later, when we created the Pepsi Challenge, we said, we have to sell the experience, not the product. And so we focused all around a taste test between Pepsi and Coke, which was blind, because if we did it brand identified, Coke would always win. And that became a legendary campaign as well. So it's always one important insight that often is the foundation for what can become a very, very important campaign that can change all the rules in the game.
Wow, such incredible advice for, of course, those in the marketing industry. Now, talking about advertising, in Pepsi, and you've discussed this many times, those campaigns targeted the user rather than the product. You touched on it, but why is this? Can you elaborate why this is so effective, especially in today's time with social media and bloggers, et cetera?
Well, it's even more relevant today than it ever was. And the reason is because now that everyone is connected mobily, almost everybody has a smartphone. They're communicating 40, 50 times a day. That we now can have more transparency in terms of what products cost, what customers think about products or services. Those ideas get shared around. And now people are trusting the advice of people they've never met before, but who are customers, who are out there, you know, on the web, just like they are. And they're saying, here's what I really think, because they know they don't have any other agenda but just to say what they really think about a product or service. So people are now trusting the advice of customers more than they trust the reputations of even the most established brands in the world. And just think about that for a moment. Mm-hmm. That means that there's an opportunity to build entirely new business concepts, ones that the customer will tell you or not, whether it's a good idea or not. And that's a radically different way of thinking about business, thinking about marketing, thinking about how you design products and services.
We're speaking with John Sculley, former CEO of Apple and Pepsi and current chairman of CMO of RX Advance. You're tuned to Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Are you looking to receive a greater return on your commercial real estate investments? LP Servicing, a division of Eastern Union Funding, the leading commercial real estate funding firm, can help you strengthen your investments, broaden your network, and handle your headaches. For more information, visit lpservicing.com. LP Servicing provides services that enhance your ability to get the deal done. It's just that simple. Visit www.lpservicing.com. Again, that's lpservicing.com. LP Servicing. Turn your investments into something bigger.
Polling data, anyone? Hold on, we'll get right on that. Election day is Tuesday?
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great, so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saftless on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is none other than John Sculley, former CEO of Apple and Pepsi and current chairman and CMO of RX Advance. And John, again, thank you so much for taking of your precious time to share with of your great wisdom with the listeners of Mind Your Business. It's really appreciated. Let's jump right into this great story that you've shared a number of times of how Steve Jobs persuaded you to leave Pepsi and come over to Apple.
Well, Steve Jobs was then in his 20s. He was about 26 years old. Okay. The board was not prepared to make him CEO of the company. Steve was always brilliant, but he wasn't a seasoned executive back in those early days. But they gave him, as the largest shareholder, as the chairman of the board, as the head of the new Macintosh group that was developing this new product that was going to come out in a couple of years, they gave him the veto right on whoever the board did want to recruit to become the CEO of Apple. Mm-hmm. And the result was they went through over 20 different candidates, you know, logical ones, you know, out of the high-tech industry, and Steve turned them all down. So David Rockefeller, who was one of the largest shareholders in Apple back in those early days, said, well, let's try a different industry in a different part of the country than Silicon Valley. And they went to Jerry Roach, who was then the most admired executive recruiter, and he suggested my name. And so Steve and I met back in 1982. We spent 5 months, Yitzhak, getting to know each other. Every weekend, I'd either be in California with Steve or he'd be back in New York with me. And we finally got up to about March of 1983. And after spending a whole day together on a Sunday, I had taken Steve over to the Museum of Metropolitan Museum of Art to show him things that I knew he didn't know, to see how he receptive he'd be to new ideas. And he took me to the Towered Record Store to hear his favorite music. And then we ended up on the terrace of this new apartment that Steve had just bought at the San Remo Towers, which he later sold to Bono. And so we're standing up there on the terrace of this triplex apartments, and we're looking out over the Hudson River. And I turned to Steve as the sun's starting to set, and I said, "Steve, I'm sorry, but I'm not coming to Apple. I'll be your advisor. I'll do it for free, but I'm not coming."
After those months of rendezvous.
And, I started to think. I said, I'm not a high-tech guy. I've never worked in a startup environment like Apple. And, I'm not an engineer. So why would they want, why would anybody respect me if I, went out to Apple? So Steve, and he had this amazing ability to, because he did this time and time again throughout his life. He paused. He looked down at his running shoes. He had blue jeans on and a black turtleneck sweater, even back in those days when he was in his 20s. And he looked up at me, and he had these very, very dark eyes and jet black hair. And he looked at me and stared at me for a few seconds. And he said, "Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come with me and change the world?" And it just knocked the wind out of me. I didn't give a different answer, but 5 days later, I was a new employee at Apple. Just shows you how charismatic and compelling Steve was to find exactly the right words at exactly the right moment to get somebody to do something he wanted them to do.
What a story. What a story. Now, talking about Apple, the CEO of Apple, I mean, how it grew, the innovation, perhaps just in a general way you could share it with the audience.
Well, I was brought into Apple by the board because the Apple II was 6 years old. It was aging. It was outsold by the IBM PC. It was outsold by Atari 2-1, outsold by Commodore 2-1. The Apple III had failed. The Lisa, another follow-on product, had failed. And the company was going to run out of cash and go bankrupt before the Macintosh that Steve was creating would even reach the market. So my job was, I didn't have to know anything about technology. I had to know a lot about how do you sell a computer. And so we took the Apple II, and I became head of the Apple II group. Even though I was CEO, I lived over with the Apple II organization. And we turned the product around, and it became even more successful than anybody else at that time. And it generated the cash for the next 3 years that enabled Steve to build the Macintosh. And then together we launched the Macintosh because I was a marketing guy, if not an engineer. And we did that in 1984. The problem was that Moore's Law, which is this well understood technology law that says that the power of microprocessors doubles every 2 years, that the Macintosh back in 1984 and 85 just wasn't powerful enough. Microprocessors were just too early in their development to do the sophisticated graphics that the Mac was intended to do. And so the product started to fail. And Steve blamed me. He said, "Well, it was the marketing." I said, "No, Steve, it's the product." Mm. And that's what all your engineers are telling us. And so eventually that's what led to the breakup between Steve and me. And so I was left alone at the helm. We were partners before that. We continued to introduce new versions of the Mac each year. And then the processors got more powerful, and the Mac became very successful. We created desktop publishing, an idea Steve had actually had. And then we followed that with an idea I had, which was called desktop presentations. We launched a new product called PowerPoint. We launched what became the most successful notebook computer, the PowerBook. By the end of the decade, my 10 years at Apple, we were the largest selling personal computer in the world. We had $2 billion of cash. And at that point, the board and many of the managers wanted to license the Mac technology, much the way Microsoft did. And I felt that was a terrible mistake. I thought it would bankrupt the company. I refused to do it. I got fired because I wouldn't do it. Mm. They hired two other CEOs after me during the next 4 years. The company almost spiraled into bankruptcy during those 4 years. And fortunately, Steve Jobs was recruited back and 1997. I left in 1993. And you know the rest of the story. The genius was now a far more savvy, experienced executive than he was when he left. And he became the most successful, famous CEO ever.
Now, of course, the most famous and acknowledged fact about what sets Apple from all the technology companies is how simplified the products are. If I may say, they're dummy proof. Of course, there's a tremendous amount of technology under the hood. But when you look at it, I mean, just an iPod, for example, it's just so simple to use. Where did that, you know, whose idea is that? Who, you know, realized that, you know, you look at these old radios and tape recorders, there was 10, a dozen more or more knobs and functions. And Apple revolutionized that by saying, hey, make it dummy proof. If someone is, you know, is savvy enough and they want to dig down, they can get that. But
Steve Jobs has to get all the credit for that. Let's take the iPod example that you just mentioned. Before the iPod, there were hundreds of different MP3 players that could play music.
Right.
But then along came Steve Jobs, and he saw that there was a new miniaturized disk drive that came out from Toshiba. No one had ever seen anything like this before. So small, it could be put into a mobile device. And so Steve came up with the idea of putting this miniaturized little disk drive into a mobile device, and he calls it the iPod. But not only was it brilliant in conception, but two other things made the difference. One was the way that Steve presented it to the world. And he said, how would you like to have 1,000 songs in your pocket? He didn't talk about technology. He talked about the customer experience. And it goes back to the point I was making earlier. It's always about the customer. It's always about how do you satisfy customers. And Steve used to say, to design a beautiful product, don't start with the technology. Start with the customer experience. And part of that customer experience in the iPod was not just the device itself, but it was something that Steve came up with called iTunes. Up until that time, the music industry was impenetrable. No one thought they could take on the music industry. Music was sold in albums. And the idea that Steve had was, why not sell a song for 99 cents? In other words, unbundle the songs from the album and put those hundreds, eventually thousands, eventually millions of songs, you know, on iTunes, and people could buy that, you know, on their iPod device. And so he completely reconceptualized the way people thought about music. And we saw him do that over and over again throughout his life.
Wow. Now, before we go to a break, and then, of course, we want to talk about, RX Advance, you've talked about the Steve Jobs method. Now, of course, we've touched on it in various different ways, but perhaps you could just, to wrap up this particular segment, what is the Steve Jobs method?
The Steve Jobs methodology is to always start with the user experience. It's all about design. It's not just about cool technology. Design included both the hardware, the materials, the look and feel of the experience. Design also meant simplification. I can remember many times we would sit around the Macintosh engineering lab. An engineer late at night would bring Steve a demo of some improvement he'd made. He said, look, Steve, I got it down from 4 steps to 3 steps. I want to show it to you. And Steve would look at him and say, I'm not going to look at it. Yeah, get it down to 2 steps before I'll take a look at it. And he was, you know, a tough executive in the sense that he was very demanding. On the other hand, it was always around a set of principles. And one principle was, you know, simplification is the ultimate sophistication. No compromises. I remember when we were coming out with the first Macintosh, Yitzhak, it was a board redesign that Steve wanted to do for the motherboard. The Macintosh was impenetrable because Steve had designed it so nobody could get inside the box, if anyone remembers the original the Macintosh. And one of the engineers said, well, Steve, no one's going to see this. Now, who will know? He said, I'll know. And that was Steve Jobs. Yeah, no compromises.
And I love that quote. Simplification is the ultimate sophistication. We're speaking with John Sculley. What a treat. Former CEO of Apple and Pepsi and current chairman and CEO and CMO of RX Advance. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
If you own a business, you've got competition. So you have to be different. The number one proven way to be different is to write a book. Think about what The 7 Habits did for Stephen Covey and what The Tipping Point did for Malcolm Gladwell. At Black Card Books, we have a system proven to position you as an authority in your market. Join us for a 2.5-day boot camp, September 22nd through the 24th, and learn the steps toward becoming a successful author. Visit publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB. That's publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB. Increase your influence, your sales, and your income. Go to publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB.
Are you looking to receive a greater return on your commercial real estate investments? LP Servicing, a division of Eastern Union Funding, the leading commercial real estate funding firm, can help you strengthen your investments, broaden your network, and handle your headaches. For more information, visit lpservicing.com. LP Servicing provides services that enhance your ability to get the deal done. It's just that simple. Visit www.lpservicing.com. Again, that's lpservicing.com. LP Servicing. Turn your investments into something bigger.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit WebsiteWithBrains.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area. And my guest is from New York, born in New York. Take a guess. It's none other than John Sculley, former CEO of Apple, Pepsi, and current chairman and CEO and CMO of RX Advance. Let's talk about RX Advance, the first cloud-based pharmacy benefit management platform. Can you talk about the service and why it's so revolutionary?
Well, again, let's start with the customer problem. And this one happens to be a really big problem. And it's totally relevant to, I think, all of our listeners. Our political leaders, it doesn't make any difference whether they're Democrats or Republicans, our political leaders know how to design an improved health insurance replacement for our current one, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And they know how to provide a sustainable health insurance for 95% of Americans. But here's the problem. The dilemma is how to deal with that remaining 5% of Americans who require very expensive chronic care that costs about half of the total U.S. health care spend. And by half of the U.S. health care spend for 5% of Americans, I'm talking about $1.5 trillion per year, just for that 5% of the population. So what the politicians aren't focused on yet is how do we solve delivering the better health care at a much lower cost for people who are chronically ill, who represent that 5% of the population. And these are people who typically have long-term diseases. They may have 8 or 9 attending physicians. They may be taking 15 to 20 prescribed medications a day. And the reality is that physicians would like to be able to know when many of these prescribed drugs actually are duplicating the effectiveness of other drugs. Remember, these physicians are prescribing drugs and they don't know what the other attending physicians are prescribing because the information systems aren't developed enough yet. And they'd like to know which of these drugs are going to have bad side effects. And the reality is that it's not just the pharmaceuticals that's the big cost of, you know, maybe reducing the number of pharmaceuticals because of duplication or side effects down for those patients, but it's all the other unnecessary drug-related medical procedures that result from physicians not having personalized drug-impacted medical patient information easily at hand. And that's the big problem that RX Advance solves. And what it means is that we're now working with some of the politicians and some of the leadership in both parties to say, how can we take the fee-for-service Medicaid, where, you know, most of the people who joined Obamacare actually were put on Medicaid, how can we redesign that for these chronically ill people who are so expensive so that they get a better quality of life, these patients, at the same time dramatically lower the costs? And we estimate that the health system could save hundreds of billions of dollars across the whole health system. Medicaid alone, mm-hmm. could probably save $50 billion a year if we went in and do the kinds of things that we've developed at Rx Advance. And so this, for me, is every bit as exciting as anything I ever did at Apple. It's a giant problem that needs to be solved. Everyone understands the impact of the outrageous inflation that we're seeing in health insurance. And for chronically ill people, it's a solvable problem.
Wow. You know, another takeaway from the first part of this interview is that how you've taken something which is, I mean, a nearly impossible task, and I'm going to use the quote you said earlier, simplification is the ultimate sophistication, to somehow simplify this, get the genie in the bottle and figure out a way to simplify it, and by doing that, saving a ton of money.
Yeah, and here's the insight. Just as I said, I learned so much when I was the first MBA hired by Pepsi, and they put me out on a route truck, and I worked in bottling plants, and I reset shelves and supermarkets and all those things. I said, I got to get my hands dirty in healthcare. So I've spent 10 years learning the complex system of healthcare delivery. Not a lot of people are willing to spend, you know, 10 years of their life learning something as complex as that, because there are thousands of rules. So in the case of Rx Advance, you know, we had to build a system that could deal with 60,000 different benefit plans. We have to be able to process, you know, hundreds of millions of claims. We have to be able to follow protocols, thousands of rules that are created by special interests. We have to be able to adapt to different state rules in addition to the federal regulations in a highly regulated industry. And most high-tech people aren't prepared to spend that patient time learning the complexity of the system. If I'm good at anything, and remember, I'm still not an engineer, what I'd like to think I'm good at is, how do you take something that's really complex, unpack it, unwrap it, and be able to simplify it and then explain it in a simpler way and help the technical people who are going to build the system be able to put their talents against exactly that kind of a problem, but simplify it so it becomes a solvable problem.
And it's amazing that that is a mark of CEOs. I remember when I got my lucky break and started off at the age of 19, and someone pulled me by the side and said to me about the particular CEO that I was working for. He said he has a way of taking complex problems and just solving them in a very simple way. And the person who made... you go.
So I was just going to add to that. I am not the CEO of Rx Advance. I did not found the company, but the founder found me, and he reached out to me, and I was so impressed with his experience and his talent that he's the one who built the system. I didn't build it, but I helped him as his partner be able to conceptualize it, to explain it, to get in front of the major health plans, to get in front of the all the important people in the system that we had to get to in this giant industry. It's a $3 trillion industry. Just to give you a comparison, if you take the entire industry that Uber addresses, you know, which is the
transportation,
being able to get a more personalized taxi service, that's a $100 billion industry. Healthcare is a $3 trillion industry. Yeah. So it's much bigger and more complex. And I was so fortunate to meet up with Ravi Ika, who had a lot of health tech experience, a wonderful CEO, recruits great people, great culture, great morale, and it couldn't be done without a superb CEO like Ravi Ika.
Now, of course, this leads me to my next question, and that is big data.
You know, how does it impact healthcare and really all industries by those that are a student and really understand how to interpret big data, quote unquote?
Well, I actually have some background in mathematics, and I've always been interested in data science. My wife is a data scientist. We're deeply involved in artificial intelligence and machine learning and some of our other businesses, as well as Rx Advanced. And here's what's exciting, that the power of microprocessing has increased so rapidly that with cloud computing, the cost of processing massive amounts of data, the storage of massive amounts of data, has become a commodity. And we've seen it change industry after industry, whether it's the entertainment industry, whether the communications industry, e-commerce, and many other examples. Ironically, in healthcare, healthcare has really missed the big impact of cloud computing up until now. So Rx Advanced is actually, in this $3 trillion industry, it's hard to believe, one of the first really big role model companies. We'll do $500 million revenue this year. It's our second year of being in the market. We're estimating several billion of revenue next year, and Robbie believes that we can get at least $10 billion of revenue by 2020. It's that big an industry, and it's that transformative, what Robbie Ica has created at Rx Advanced. And it's all around data analytics.
Now, would you say that these days are really the dream time for investors to invest in startups in healthcare specifically?
It's hard to say. I mean, if you look at something like fintech, there are probably 40 or 50 companies that have billion-dollar valuations or more. I'm talking about private companies. Mm-hmm. If you look in health tech, they're very, very few at this point. In other words, health tech is running about a decade behind fintech. Fintech is financial services using big data analytics and mobility and things of that sort, like peer-to-peer lending and electronic payment systems. I'm involved in fintech as well as health tech with a company called Lantern Credit. We've completely revolutionized with artificial intelligence, how to think about consumer credit finance. Well, there are lots of role model companies in fintech to look at. There are very few. You know, Rx Advanced, we believe, will be one of the very small number of innovative companies in health tech currently that are multi-billion dollar valuation companies. But it's going to change. It's just a matter of time until health tech has as many role model companies in its industry as fintech currently has.
We're speaking with John Sculley, former CEO of Apple and Pepsi and current chairman and CMO of Rx Advanced, right here on Mind Your Business. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
If you own a business, you've got competition. So you have to be different. The number one proven way to be different is to write a book. Think about what The 7 Habits did for Stephen Covey and what The Tipping Point did for Malcolm Gladwell. At Black Card Books, we have a system proven to position you as an authority in your market. Join us for a 2.5-day boot camp, September 22nd through the 24th, and learn the steps toward becoming a successful author. Visit publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB. That's publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB. Increase your influence, your sales, and your income. Go to publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB.
And And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area. And, of course, around the world through so many technologies, online, wabcbizradio.com, the 77 WABC app. And in case you're just tuning in, you missed 30, whatever it is, we're right now 40 minutes into the show, of incredible content. But no worries. By Tuesday, after the show airs, it's all up online. The easiest way to access it is going to wabcbizradio.com, wabcbizradio.com. And, of course, there you can listen to it on the iTunes channel. Many of our listeners are hooked up on the iTunes channel. And, of course, if you follow me on social media, Yitzhak Saftless, I'm the only one in North America. So any way you spell it, I'll come up. And you would know that my guest this evening was none other than John Sculley. John Sculley, former CEO of Apple, CEO of Pepsi, and current chairman and CMO of RX Advance. Now, if I may, just, we know there's a new administration in town and running America. And the general feeling is that healthcare is just, it's such a we know it's such a big part of the GDP. And anyone coming in is like, how are you going to solve this? You really can't solve it. You just have to put Band-Aids on it. RX Advance is jumping in. Is it really solvable, John?
I've been thinking about healthcare for a decade now and really getting involved in helping entrepreneurs build new companies. And we've had quite a bit of success. And I think back, Chuck, to when I was spending a lot of time at the MIT Media Lab, one of my favorite professors, Marvin Minsky, who's recognized today as the father of artificial intelligence, used to say, you don't really understand something really well unless you understand it more than one way. And I'd learned from Steve Jobs and Bill Gates how they saw the same evidence that everyone else was looking at in the computer industry, and yet they came away and realized that the future of computing was inevitably going to move to people owning their own personal computers. And they really turned that into a noble cause, to change the world. Well, now let's jump to healthcare. And the politicians are all pointing fingers at each other. It's all about, if I do it a different way, I'm going to have to take away something from somebody. And the reality is that they aren't looking at how can we revolutionize the way in which healthcare is delivered, not just how do we subsidize the cost of serving patients when they're ill. And the reality is, and this is not coming just from me, this is coming from McKinsey and Company, it's coming from many other highly respected organizations that have studied it. Of the $3 trillion spend, there's over $900 billion of waste, fraud, abuse, duplication of expense. And if you go into the healthcare industry and say, why is there $900 billion of wasted, unnecessary spending that's going on in this industry out of the $3 trillion? That's almost a third of the spend every year. And the reality is you start to see that we're delivering healthcare very similar to the way we were doing it 25 years ago. Very little changes have gone on in a way that will fundamentally change the economics of the industry. So as Willie Sutton used to say, the reason I rob banks is because that's where the money is. Yeah. Well, the money in the healthcare system that is most addressable for innovation is around chronic care. It's the chronically ill people. That's 5% who are, 50% of the entire health spend, $1.5 trillion a year. And so innovators like RX Advance, I hope we're a role model for others, mm-hmm. should be looking at how do we take the things that those of us who have been in high tech and understand cloud computing and unstructured data analytics and mobility and all of these things that have worked so well in other industries, how do we adapt that to this incredibly complex industry called healthcare? And how do we convince people in the healthcare industry that there's a better way to deliver healthcare than the ways we're doing it today? A big part of that is taking the chronically ill people and all the leaders that I've met with in the health insurance industry and in the large hospital systems want to do this. They want to move these chronically ill people as much as they can out of the hospital beds into their own homes. We know with the internet and with analytics and things that we can now start to think about solutions that just weren't practical even a few years ago. And that's where the big opportunity is. This is a solvable problem. And part of what I do is go out and speaking to the political leaders and say, hey, wait a minute. There are other solutions you haven't thought about yet because you don't come from the technology or the healthcare industry that go beyond, you know, arguing over, you know, where we're going to get the money to subsidize, you know, people, particularly the very ill people who are costing so much to the health system. So I want RX Advance to become a role model, just like Apple became a role model, like Pepsi Challenge and Pepsi Generation became a role model in a different industry. I want RX Advance to be a role model that this is a solvable problem with American ingenuity, just like so many other industries have had problems solved in the past.
Yeah, it's so refreshing to hear you. And you make it sound so simple. But of course, with the, I think the fair word is swagger of Apple and Pepsi and real world examples, it's you're the man, what should I say? Wow. Now, to quote you, you've said in the past, a hole in the market that you can compete with to take market share from someone else is not necessarily what a business plan should be. It's about expanding the market. And you just touched on this in your previous example in the industry you're in now. Maybe you could discuss that about just it's expanding, not necessarily saying, all right, if I'm going to jump in here, I'm going to be pulling away from someone else. How do you look at it that it's expanding market share?
Well, I didn't really know about that when I was at Pepsi because it was a battle for market share, almost a gladiatorial competition between Pepsi and Coke. Right. And if the market share went down for one brand or the other, people got fired. So those were the rules of the game. And then I go to Apple and I meet Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, and they're not talking about taking market share away from IBM. They're talking about it creating an entirely new industry. And it all begins with the customer plan, not the business plan. So many people believe that you do an annual business plan. It's based on where you were last year, where you think you're going to be next year, and then how you allocate the resources to, you know, various activities and different departments. The really important thing to transform a business is to start with the customer plan. Just as I said, Steve Jobs always said, start with the customer experience and then work back to the technology. In the case of a customer plan, you start with things that are important to the customer. You know, what's a big customer problem to solve? Well, I described one in healthcare with the chronically ill people. How do you get customers engaged in that? Well, you got to design a better experience for the customer. Otherwise, why should they adopt it? So customer plans is about what does it take to engage the customer? What does it cost to engage the customer? How do you retain customers? How do you get them coming back to your product or service over time? What's the lifetime value of the customer? All the metrics that are built around customer metrics. When you do that, you start to see the same evidence of the market in a different way, much like Professor Marvin Minsky said, you know, you don't really understand something well unless you understand it more than one way. I always like to understand it a better way through the eyes of the customer.
Now, you referred a number of times to Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, and they say that there is one conversation between the two that changed your perspective on business. Perhaps you could share that and that incident.
Well, I had been at Apple for a few months. It was typical that Steve Jobs and I would be over at the Macintosh Engineering Lab, you know, late at night. Engineers don't usually show up for work until around noon, but they're there at 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there, and Bill Gates is down visiting, and Steve and Bill are talking, and I'm just sitting there listening, and they're talking about their noble cause. Well, I've never heard words like noble cause and business before, and Steve and Bill, they're saying, yep, it's all about the noble cause, and Steve said, Steve Jobs, am building the Macintosh, and it's going to be a bicycle for the mind. And Bill Gates says, the future is all about shrink wrap software that will empower individuals to do knowledge work on a PC. And both Bill and Gates, and they used to fight a lot too, but one thing they totally agreed on was that They could change the world one person at a time by empowering individuals with personal computers. Bill focused on software. Steve focused on the experience of graphics and making a creative machine, what he called the bicycle for the mind. And they said, we're going to change the world, and we're going to do it one person at a time. And that was their noble cause. Well, now, those words have stuck with me through all of these decades later. And at this point in my life, I said, I only want to work on noble causes. And that's why I got so impassioned by healthcare, because I said, this is a really big problem. It's a big customer problem as much as anything else. I know high technology. I've worked with consumers before in other businesses, and I want to spend this part of my life working on healthcare, because I think this is every bit as big as anything that I ever worked with decades earlier with Steve Jobs and Bill Gates.
Now, I of course, this next question I'm going to ask, you can answer on a massive level, but there are a lot of small business owners and medium-sized business owners that listen to the show, and therefore, my next question has to do with challenges and setbacks. You've touched on it earlier in the program about, you know, there were times when Apple was staring at, I mean, they weren't staring at bankruptcy, but, you know, the ups and downs, the challenges, the setbacks, even with software, you mentioned the Mac 2. How should a CEO or any executive hardwire or brace themselves to deal with, you know, challenges as they race towards them?
First, you have to really believe in what you're doing. You have to believe in it so well that you can attract talented people to want to join you, because things are never done by an individual. It's always by a team. And you have to be able to explain what makes you so impassioned about what you're doing and why it's so important to have your team focused on the same objectives as you have. And then you have to realize that when you're doing something innovative, you're going to make mistakes. You know, you're breaking new ground. If it meant it could be done with a larger organization without making mistakes, then you wouldn't have startup companies. You wouldn't have small companies. So the whole role of a small company is to be able to take bigger risks. You take risks, you're going to make mistakes. And if you make mistakes, you have to learn, in a small business particularly, never, ever, ever give up. You know, go back and say, so what did I learn from my mistake? It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to fail. Just try to learn from that so that the next time you can improve on the things that didn't work the last time. As Thomas Edison said, I didn't just figure out how to make a light bulb. I figured out 10,000 ways in which it didn't work before we came up with a way that it did work. I remember having dinner with Kobe Bryant one night. He was telling me, he said, you know, I do 1,000 basketball shots every day of my life. And I said, well, why do you do that? He said, because I know that I want to be the best basketball player in the world. And the only way I can do it is I've got to work incredibly hard at it every day of his life. So hard work, never giving up, being, impassioned about what you believe in and being able to convey that to other people. Those are fundamental in any business, particularly smaller companies.
John, as we approach the close, I can't thank you enough for this this treat to join me here on Mind Your Business. What final takeaways would you like to share with the listeners of Mind Your Business?
The final takeaway that we haven't talked about yet is curiosity. Yes. When I was a young boy growing up in New York City, I didn't really want toys. All I wanted was electrical parts. When I was very young, 6 years old, I wanted dry cell batteries and wires and little nice switches and light bulbs and things that I could connect together. As I got older, I used to go down to Cortlandt Street downtown, which was where the secondhand radio equipment was sold, a lot of it, World War II surplus radios. I became a ham radio operator at 13 K2HEP. And I had this curiosity. I've had curiosity my entire life. I'm still curious. And so I would say, if you are a curious person, you'll be observing things even when you don't know when that observation might be valuable to you at some time in the future, people who are lucky create their own lucks, and they do it because they're curious and they're observing and they're thinking about things all the time. So curiosity is a fundamental talent, I think, of the most successful entrepreneurs.
What an incredible show. Wow. We're out of time, but I want to encourage the listeners, of course, to go to our channel, our website that has every single show. And by Tuesday morning, this episode, this incredible episode of Mind Your Business, where we featured John Sculley, former CEO of Apple, Pepsi, and current chairman and CMO of RX Advance. It will be up on the website, WABCBizRadio.com. Well, stay tuned up next for Rita Cosby here on 77 WABC, and tune in again next Sunday night at 11 p.m. for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night from 11 until midnight on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.